Until 11, Mitchell's Front Page on 94.7 The Pulse.
And I'm now joined on the line by our regular on a Monday morning at this time, Toby Hagan from Wheels Magazine. Good morning to you, Toby.
Morning, Mitchell.
Now, we're all excited about the Wheels Car of the Year. What car has been announced as Car of the Year? And tell us about the testing process to get to that point.
Yeah, well, look, the winner this year was the Mazda MX-5. It's actually the third time the MX-5, the little sports car, has won. Won in its first, well, the first ever one in 1989, and this time it's taken it out in 2015. So, amazing result for what is a very cool little car. It's obviously a lot more affordable than any MX-5 before it, and that played a huge part in the judges' minds. I was lucky enough to be one of those judges, which was pretty good, an intensive process of seven odd days of just full-on driving, going through more than 50 cars to determine which one was the most significant and the best for 2015.
That's very interesting. I mean, are you driving them around a racetrack, or are you driving them through the city? How do you get that understanding of how the car functions?
Well, we actually start off at a proving ground. So this year it was at the Holden Proving Ground, just outside of Melbourne, down towards Phillip Island there. So basically, it's you put them all through exactly the same drive. So it's it tries to encounter everything you might experience in an everyday drive. Everything from an emergency stop to freeway type speeds to higher speed corners to stop start, bumps, as many bumps as we can throw into the mix to try and show up the bad ones. And yeah, just go through every single car. Then we actually go out onto public roads. So once we've done the more dynamic testing, we go onto public roads and treat them as anyone else would treat their car. So it's school zones and hills and all sorts of things. So it's again just trying to expose the ones that that aren't so good and the ones that stand out.
And are safety features part of the criteria?
Yeah, absolutely. That comes into it in a big way. So we look at obviously independent crash testing to see how various vehicles have performed in that. We look at everything from the latest active safety features and how prevalent or available they are on various models and all those sorts of things. So it's basically, I guess we try and take into account every single thing that a person potentially buying that car would. So it's going through five different criteria, everything from technology and safety to function. So it's, looking at, and efficiency is another one. So, you know, not just fuel efficiency, but how efficient is it using materials and all those sorts of things. So, as I said, pretty intensive process.
And I suppose one of the biggest things that people think about is value and the actual cost of the car, and I suppose where it sits in the marketplace. How does this one perform there?
Yeah, look, very well. Very well in terms of it's $15,000 more affordable than the one before it. So looking at starting price of around $32,000. But more so, one of the things we also take into account with value is resale value. So what the car is worth in say, 3 years' time, 3 or 4 years' time, when most people turn them over. And that's a very important consideration, given that resale is the single biggest cost with owning a new vehicle. So we want to make sure that they're not going to dump in value too much.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, we're very jealous of your travelling lifestyle, and you went over to South Africa last week, is that right?
I did, yeah. Went over to drive the updated Porsche 911. So this is a an update to the car that came out in about 2011. It's all new engines in it. So basically turbocharged engines across the range for the first time in a 911. So the 911 is Porsche's most iconic car. It's the car that defines the brand, really, and has done for many decades. And to switch to turbocharged engines has been a bit controversial, but it's been all about trying to reduce fuel use and improve emissions. So it's doing what a lot of the European car makers have done and add those turbochargers to try and therefore downsize the engine, but get more power from the turbo. So it's a great car. It's certainly a step up in terms of performance. It does lose a little bit of the character, but not too much. And of course, the other one we drove over there was the 911 Turbo. So this is where it gets a little bit confusing. They've all got turbocharged engines, but they still have a specific model called the 911 Turbo, and that's the hero of the range. It's it's got even more power. So instead of a 3-litre engine, you get a 3.8-litre engine and a heck of a lot more grunt. And that car was just phenomenal. We got to drive it around the Kyalami racetrack, which is a pretty iconic racetrack just north of Johannesburg. And yeah, amazing in terms of how quick it is and how polished it is as an all-round car. It's not just the acceleration, it's the braking, it's the way it tackles corners and how easy it is to extract that performance out of it. So it's a pretty special time and certainly a fun few days.
And what's the significance of South Africa? Is that just where it was or is there some connection to the brand?
Well, no, I was trying to work that out too, to be honest, because usually Porsche would take you to, well, sometimes America, but usually Europe, where obviously they're based. But the significance for them was they've actually just purchased that Kyalami racetrack. So last year they bought it. They're doing it up in an amazing facility, and I guess they wanted to show the car off in that environment, which was good. As I said, great racetrack. The stuff around the racetrack is maybe not quite as appealing. Johannesburg probably wouldn't be high on my holiday hit list.
Yeah.
And you know, some of the roads weren't as picturesque as you might get in other parts of the world. But so it was really more about that racetrack.
And in Australia, I mean, is there any merit in buying that turbo model? I mean, given that we can only do 110 throughout Victoria, for example, I mean, open speed limits in the Northern Territory. But yeah.
Well, look, yeah, you make a good point, and it's certainly, you know, this car accelerates to 100 k's an hour in, well, they claim 2.9 seconds, but they quietly admit it'll do it in about 2.6 seconds, so the fun's over pretty quickly. But what you're finding these days, Mitchell, is a lot of the racetracks around the country are having sort of, public days, basically, so you can roll up, pay a few $100s, and take your car on a track and have a bit of fun. So the type of people buying these cars are, in many cases, quite likely to at least once every now and again take their car out and really experience it in the environment it was designed for, because as you say, it is difficult to experience it on the road these days. You appreciate why cars like that are built when you're driving somewhere like Germany, but it doesn't make sense on something like the Geelong Freeway. It's not nearly as fun and engaging.
Yeah, I reckon. I think a lot of people might just leave them in their garage to look at in that circumstance.
You spend your whole time looking after your license, I reckon it'd be.
That's right. That's exactly right. Now, the Apple CarPlay was fitted to that vehicle, but not the Android Auto system. What's happening there?
Indeed, yeah, pretty controversial move, but Porsche decided that they had a look at all their customers and worked out they say between 75 and 80% of their customers have an iPhone, as opposed to one of the other brands of phone that typically run Android systems, the Google Android operating system. So they said, well, we're not going to bother putting in the Android Auto. So they've only done Apple CarPlay, which, as they say, looks after most of their buyers, but it potentially alienates almost a quarter of their buyers. So it sort of says to them, well, you've got to get a new phone. But I guess if you're negotiating on a $400,000 plus car, the dealer potentially will be incentivised to maybe throw the phone in for nicks. And I guess people at that end of the market may not be arguing too much.
I reckon. But is it a difficult thing to install? Is it just a chip, a piece of software? How do they actually install that Apple CarPlay system?
It's just software. I was trying to get to the bottom of whether there are licensing fees attached to it, and I suspect there are. Which is why they may have said, well, we're not going to bother paying the licensing fee. So, but no, very easy process, and indeed, so Porsche is part of the Volkswagen group, and a lot of the Volkswagen brands have both Apple CarPlay and Android Auto. So it's certainly quite an easy thing to do, and obviously they can do it if they want to. They've just decided not to, and they said they'll monitor the market and see what the feedback is, and if they're getting negative feedback, they'll bung it in. So it's I guess to watch and see, and if enough people arc up, they'll potentially do it.
I mean, presumably from Apple and Android's perspective, it's in their best interest to get this software in as many cars as possible, because that means people buy phones with that operating system on it.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's interesting, if you look at the last figures I saw for phone sales in Australia, certainly Android was the more popular operating system. I think it was 50-something percent of phones sold in the country have it, whereas Apple was down at high 30s from memory. So it is a more popular system, but I guess it's the people who buy more expensive cars seem to tend more towards Apple.
And I think you told us about the Apple CarPlay when it was right on the cutting edge last year. Have you actually used it yourself now, and what are your impressions?
I have, yeah. I've actually got a car at the moment that's got it in there, and it's a good system. The one negative is you have to plug the phone in. So unlike Bluetooth, where you just get in the car, start it, and they automatically pair up, you physically have to plug the phone in. So there's a 2 or 3 second job that might annoy some people.
But I suppose it charges the phone at the same time.
Yeah, absolutely. Charges the phone. And look, the functionality you get is very good. You get, the screen that comes up is very similar. It's all sort of like oversized versions of the apps that are already on your phone. So you've got the little icons up there, very familiar. It cuts out the apps that are considered to be not needed while you're driving, so games and so on, but it will keep your mapping functions there. It'll keep your your audio and media functions there, so all those sorts of things, and obviously phone. So you can control all those sorts of features straight off the car system without having to touch the phone. So it's pretty good in that regard. It actually works very well every time I've used it so far.
And also you told us, moving on to Hyundai, about the Hyundai vehicle that got that very disappointing 4-star result, but things have changed and now it's got a 5-star safety rating, is that right?
Yeah, this was the Tucson SUV. It's the volume selling SUV, you know, the $30,000 plus SUV came out in the latter half of last year and got a very disappointing 4-star result. It was criticised by the Australasian New Car Assessment Program for having inferior frontal offset protection, particularly around the driver's knees and legs. So Hyundai went back to the drawing board and have made some changes. Now, they haven't really publicised those changes, but to my understanding, it is to do with the structure of the vehicle. So they've improved the structure of the vehicle and also made some changes to the brake pedal, which may have been potentially injuring people. So they fixed those and they've sent the car back to be tested. A few weeks ago it got announced to be a 5-star car. So it does have that maximum rating now, but only for the cars that were produced after those changes were made. So it's... it was an interesting one for Hyundai. They were expecting a 5-star result. They, as I said, got a very disappointing 4-star, and I think they'll be going back looking at their development and testing and internal processes to make sure that can't happen again, because it's a bit of egg on face they could have done without.
And if you were someone that bought the car before the 5-star rating and yours is only 4-star, is that going to affect your resale value?
Well, look, it potentially could. It all comes down to supply and demand and how much the used car market takes that into account. But it certainly can't help. I mean, if I was in the used car market, I would certainly be looking for one of the ones with the updated safety. So, if enough people do that, it would potentially impact it. Another interesting thing is, there were people who bought that car before the 5-star result had been, the 4-star result had been announced, expecting it to get a 5-star result. So I'm wondering if any consumer affairs department or anything has got anything to say about that, have they got any potential for compensation given that didn't perform as expected.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Well, Toby, thank you very much for joining us once again, and we'll speak to you in a fortnight.
Sounds good. Thanks, Mitchell.
Thank you very much. Toby Hagen there from Wheels Magazine, always a really important part of Mitchell's Front Page every single Monday fortnight. We'll go to a break and more to come in a moment.
Mitchell's Front Page with Mitchell Dye. Mondays and Tuesdays from 9 till 11 on 94.7 The Pulse.